The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to another episode of Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that hasn't nerfed D.Va yet. We've got a great show for you today. Dan Reichert from Giant Bomb is here to tell us all about his Taco Bell wedding and what it's like working for Giant Bomb on the East Coast. We're also going to talk about the news, which includes a World of Tanks YouTuber, Red Dead Redemption 2, getting delayed to 2018, as everyone expected, and Overwatch turning a year old, which is kind of crazy. It feels like it's been so much longer than a year, doesn't it? Anyway, we've got a great show for you today. Let's go. We are back for another episode. My name is Jason Schreier. I am the news editor at Kotaku.com. I'm joined, as always, by Kotaku editor at large, Kirk Hamilton. We have a great show for you guys today. Dan Reichert from Giant Bomb is going to join us a little bit later. But first, Kirk and I have to bullshit a little bit. Kirk, are you ready to bullshit?
I'm always ready to bullshit. That is okay. Like, ready to bullshit is on the back of my business card. But I don't have a business card, because as we decided a couple weeks ago, you don't need a business card anymore.
It's a waste.
Yep. There's a relic of a bygone era.
So, Kirk, I just want to tell you that before we started, I checked the weather in New York City, and it is 69 degrees today.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is some nice weather. It is freaking like 85 degrees here, and it was like almost 100 yesterday in Portland. So we're having a heat wave, which sucks because it was a really rainy, cold fall or spring, and everybody kind of thought, oh, maybe it'll be like not a crazy summer like it was last year, and yet it looks like we're going to have another one. I got a second freaking window air conditioner so that I can survive.
Congrats.
Because it gets so hot.
Well, I'm excited to come visit you, and hopefully in August when I come to Portland, it will be less hot.
It probably won't be. It will probably be really hot, but I'm excited that you're coming to visit as well. You'll be downstairs. It's less hot down there.
So before we get started, I just want to read a couple of emails or summarize a couple of emails. So last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about Alan Wake getting pulled from Steam and the Xbox Store because of music licensing issues, and we wondered if that had happened to other things. So we got an email from Ben saying that there was a struggle for the Wonder Years and Beavis and Butthead facing those sort of music licensing issues. Another Ben emailed us saying that SNL ran a skit that originally featured a song by Van Halen.
That was Schlitz Gay, right?
Schmitz Gay,
the beer commercial. It's funny because I remember the original version of that when it aired. And now I guess it plays some like knockoff, like sound-alike song, which is interesting.
Yep, which is really interesting. And then so another show, Griffin emailed me and he said the TV show Northern Exposure was absolutely full of licensed music, but it was only for broadcast and VHS. So when they put it out, the DVDs and digital copies, they had to put in a different music or like look sound-alike stuff. Someone named Marco emailed us saying Scrubs had a bunch of licensing.
Scrubs was definitely a big one. I remember Scrubs was during the wave of shows that had like emotional scenes that were set to Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah. Uh-huh. And I think there's like a long Hallelujah segment in that. Like there was also one in like 10 different shows. I think
like
the West
that
Wing
SNL
even had
skit.
One. And it's just, you know, kind of overdone, even though that's a beautiful song and everything. But yeah, I wonder if that was one of them.
Yeah, and that West Wing, we were just talking about the West Wing, that West Wing episode Two Cathedrals had that Dire Straits song, but that still on. Oh. So I imagine that some of these music licensing deals are like in perpetuity.
Well, it sounds like, and some of them are related to format, right? From one of the emails that we got, they said this applies to broadcast and VHS, but then on DVD they had to renegotiate, which is also interesting for games because right now we think of like digital games, okay, but what does a game format mean? What if it's streaming? What if it's not? Like, there's all these questions that I get the sense in general you write contracts like that, trying to take as many things into account as you possibly can. That's why you see that language that's like throughout the universe for all of time. Like you see that language that just is sort of all encompassing, but you can't, you know, like they couldn't have predicted DVDs or Netflix streaming, you know, when they were first making Northern Exposure, you know, like licensing deals, which is it's interesting. I feel like it's just always going to be imperfect.
Because you'd probably have to pay a lot more if you want the in perpetuity,
and even then you can't take everything into account that might happen in the future.
My favorite music licensing specific show is The OC, with the gun firing and going, "What you say?"
Oh man, that's Imogen Heap, right?
Yeah, and then the SNL parody of it.
I don't know if I remember the SNL parody.
What you don't? Was that? Oh my god, it was incredible. You have to go look it up. It's Bobby Moynihan and what's his face, Fred Armisen, and a bunch of other people, and it's amazing. I don't even want to describe it because it's so good that you should just go watch it.
Nice. And then, I love that Imogen Heap. That was the first. I think that was the first time a lot of people heard that song, and that was seriously responsible for, because it's like a shot of the Pacific Coast Highway, and the funeral car comes around, and it's like, "Where are we?" And like, it's like, "What the fuck am I hearing?" Like, because it's that, you know, harmonizer voice sound that she's aiming for.
No, but I thought it was like, as soon as the gun shoots, it like immediately goes into "What you say."
I think that happens later. I think I know what you're talking about. Like,
well, that's a different part of the song. That's the part that was parody.
Oh, okay, got it. Because I think remember, the first time I ever heard it. Oh, go ahead.
I was in college and at the time, and I think it was like 2005 or 2006 or something. And I remember I was in film school with I was making film versions of this set to like Lost. So like Ben brings Locke out and shoots him. And then I cut a video that was just like playing "What You Say" when he shoots him and other stuff like that. So I very specifically remembering it hitting as soon as.
I definitely could be remembering this wrong. I think that maybe the first part of the song plays during one sequence, and then later, a little bit later, or maybe even during an intercut sequence, because that's like the climax of the song, right? It's like when that comes in. There's the part at the beginning, and I'm pretty sure that played during the funeral procession. Like when the old guy dies, the guy from Lost, the who was like the asshole who owned the boat that showed up. Caleb, was that his name on Lost? I think so. And then he was like Marissa's dad or something on the OC. I don't remember the OC well enough. I feel like I should rewatch the OC.
But regardless, it was that was the best music licensing.
It was really good. I feel like that was a show that made a lot of bands at the time. The OC was, because they would go to the club and there would always be a band playing there, and it was their Peach Pit from 90210. I don't remember what the club was called in the OC, but it would always
be like the
Bronze
from Buffy.
Right, or like the Bronze from Buffy, which was the same, where like you'd watch a Buffy episode and Amy Mann would be playing at the Bronze, and it's like, oh shit, they got Amy Mann for this. This was probably before she was super famous. And the club at the OC was that way too. Like, I can't remember, I guess none of the, there were probably some big bands, but it would definitely make bands at the time. Like, I remember at the end of OC episodes, they would say, "This episode featured music by," and it would be like the Ryan Adams cover of Wonderwall, and it would be like Ryan Adams, Wonderwall, and you could then go find it on iTunes and like buy the MP3, because people still did that, and that was like how people learned about music. It's a different time.
So before we get to the news, you had something you wanted to share.
Oh. I listened back to last like week's Destiny bonus episode, and I think it was pretty early in the morning, but there were I just noticed a couple of times where I just like said incorrect shit. Like one time I called Destiny Halo, like just in the middle of a conversation. I was like, and then, you know, like if Halo 2 is going to feel like Halo 1, and it was like, if you were paying attention, you'd just be like, oh yeah, he meant Destiny. But then once I called the Vex the Nex, it was just a very odd.
Oh yeah, I remember that, because I was
odd listening
that
back
part.
To it. Yeah, I think so. And I just didn't. I didn't remember saying that. It was a very weird feeling, and I just wanted to acknowledge to listeners that I think I must have, like, I was totally wiped. It had been a long day before, but it was very strange listening back and be like, "Huh, this is, I'm being more careless with language than I usually am." So
can I share what you just did?
That was lost on me. Yes. What did I just do?
Well, so we were preparing.
Oh, yes.
We were preparing a Zencastr link for this episode, which is one of the services we use. And you wrote episode 81, Alex Navarro, and I was like, "Kirk, is that a joke, or did you just forget that we actually have Dan Reichert on? Alex Navarro is his coworker." different giant bomb.
Yeah, it was more just I'm typing, you know, doing five different things. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, like we're having the giant bomb guy on.
And then, I really think you're just getting old and developing Alzheimer's.
It's true. Well, I am 54 years old, and that's
right. That's congrats,
when,
by the way.
That's when the early signs start to show. So yeah, apparently I'm just losing it. It's all downhill from here, man. It's great.
Yeah, have you thought? I feel like you should. It's time to get married, man. You're 54. It's like I feel like if you're gotta settle down.
54, nah, you got a good thing going. You're 54. Just keep it going. I understand that you and Dan has his Taco Bell wedding, and you have your regular wedding. Everybody wants everyone to have weddings, but when you're 54 and you've been on your own as long as I have, I'm not actually 54. Do you think there are listeners, anybody in the audience actually thinks that I'm 54?
That's possible. You look 54.
Yeah.
You can pull it off.
I definitely look 54 years old.
And we will talk about it. We will explain the Taco Bell wedding thing in just a few minutes. Yes. First, let's get to the news.
Let's do it.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So this first story, why don't you tell us about this story? Because I'm not as familiar as you are.
So this story, I'm gonna open up the link so I get this guy's name right, because it's hard to pronounce. Kotaku, this is how I look for Kotaku articles. Kotaku,
you just Googled?
World of Tanks YouTuber. And we're gonna call that up. So what happened was, this was, last week, this is a World of Tanks, which, if you don't know, is Wargaming's sort of free-to-play tank game. You will be shocked to hear that it's about a world filled with tanks.
And very popular, surprisingly huge.
Very, very popular. Yeah, these Wargaming games are popular.
Yeah.
Where you drive a tank around, and you can buy different tanks, and then there's like a lot of sort of microtransactions to upgrade your tanks and shit. This guy, Sir Foch, I think it is, F-O-C-H, is a, you know, prominent YouTuber. He is he had a kind of a partnership deal. He's like a partnered content creator with Wargaming, where he like gets, you know, codes for games and invited to things and stuff. They don't pay him, but he just makes these videos. So he made a video that was very, very critical. Mm-hmm. Apparently he's a very vocal guy who curses a lot and has strong opinions. You will also be shocked to hear that he's a video game YouTuber who curses a lot and has strong opinions and likes to rant about things. So he got
Does
really
he also say, hey guys, like and subscribe.
I would imagine there's a pretty good chance. So he wrote a video about a new tank and was very angry about it. The quote in his video is, fuck Wargaming, fuck their terrible way of making these premium tanks lately, and fuck this premium tank in particular. which is good.
Wow. Like,
tell us how you feel, man.
That's some just nuanced criticism.
Yeah, man, that's good.
As expected.
But he went in, I think, very in-depth about this tank. And so,
okay.
know, what was wrong with it and how it was kind of underpowered when you buy it, so then you're kind of... You need to buy upgrades and shit. You need to buy premium ammo for it, which you have to buy better ammo in this game, which I think is just amazing because you shoot it and then you need to buy more. It's like a Metro game in real life. You're shooting money. And so you have to upgrade the thing, basically, he was saying. And this whole thing is designed so that it's this like kind of skeevy pay-to-win thing where you buy one thing and then you need to buy more shit to make it any good. And he was upset about this. So he made this video. So then Wargaming first terminated their partnership with him and then threatened to...
What was their partnership with him? They paid
him?
He was like a
partnered content creator. So he wasn't paid. He was just... He would get free stuff or like get priority at events and stuff. And like
First of all, I mean, props to this guy for having the balls to speak up even though he was a paid content creator.
Yeah, totally.
Because
he wasn't
paid.
So not paid.
Even though he was like a partnered content creator. Because like a lot of people are just like, oh, I won't say that because I don't want to lose my deal. I don't want to stop getting free stuff.
Right. And like if that's as far as it went, like that they're right to do that, you know, whatever, sure. Like if the dude is gonna like rage about your product and you don't want him to be a partner anymore, fair. Right. But then they threatened him with a content strike, and they're like, if you don't take the video down, we will, you know, put a strike against your YouTube channel, and that can like affect, you know, there, it was very like threatening, like that can threaten, that can, I don't have all the particulars here, but it was basically you know, that'll hurt your channel, that'll be bad for you.
I mean, that's pretty much the worst threat you can make to a YouTuber.
Yeah, it's not, it's bad. Most people don't want to deal with it. Like, I think they kind of overstated some of what they could do, but it was definitely like, it was over the line. And so then he, you know, kind of talked about how that was happening. A bunch of people wrote about it. We wrote a post about it. And then actually just today, World of Tanks walked it back. Or not World of Tanks, Wargaming walked it back.
Wargaming, yeah.
And said, you know, okay, we overstepped. Like, we're not going to do that. And, like, we're going to change the way that we do things in the future. So
did they apologize?
Basically what happened. They apologized in a very funny way. Wait, let me find this story. Our headline says that they apologize, but I like their wording, which I believe maybe is just a translation issue.
Okay.
But it says, it says, we are apologizing for that. Not we apologize, but we are apologizing.
Yeah, that might be. Well, I don't know.
I think it's just a translation issue.
They're based in Cyprus, yes. I want to say.
They're some not.
Or Russia?
I think they have places in several different places around the world, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, definitely could just be a translation issue. But even whether it is or not, I like the sort of.
Yeah, they are based in Cyprus. Just
are apologizing. So they walked that back. So I guess, what do you think of that? What do you think of that whole story?
Well, first of all, I actually think it's really interesting, the question over whether a company has the right to file a copyright claim on YouTube. Because there is an argument to be made that if anyone is using footage from a game or screenshots of a game, they are using copyrighted material. And so if a company isn't happy with how their game is being portrayed on a YouTube channel, I think they do have, it might be legally hazy ground, but I think they do have the right to file a claim. It's just that it's become the norm for people to just not do that because it's a dick move to do that.
Well, it's interesting. I think that is true. Like, technically, you probably have, at least in some way, it seems like you would have a copyright claim if someone's putting up your shit, like your assets and your product on their channel. But the one interesting thing about this is that they're using the copyright claim for something that isn't really a copyright matter, which I don't really know from the law. But the sense I get a lot of times is that people don't like, judges don't like it when you're using one law to like enforce something that isn't related to that law, right? Uh-huh. Or like that, like in this case, like the guy, one of the guys from Wargaming said, oh, you know, okay, like, we know this guy is usually, like, kind of swears a lot, but this was edging into defamation territory. That was how he described it, which is saying, okay, like, so this guy is defaming us. So then you're kind of, like, you're using a copyright strike to, like, push back on someone who you're saying is defaming you, which is just a totally different thing. Right. And it kind of turns into, like, if the copyright strike just becomes the threat for anything, that's, like, not, that doesn't seem like that's, like, going to be in place forever, just because that's not a great way to do things.
Right, sure. Yeah, that's another interesting wrinkle to it. Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, it's a dick move either way. I think.
Yeah, and I don't know that he was really defaming them either. Like, I think.
No. I think I don't think that would be defamatory.
I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know, but it doesn't seem like saying. Right. Being like, you're shitty and fuck your game.
And there's also, I think there's a very high level of, at least in the U.S., since they're based in Cyprus, where is the YouTuber based? Is he in the U.S. also?
I don't know, actually.
Okay. But maybe we can look it up. But if in the U.S., I think there's a very high standard you have to prove for a defamation case because it's so tricky. And even libel cases, even when something turns out to be false, I think there's like a very high standard you have to prove in order
privacy,
to...
Privacy, invasion of privacy, much easier. Much easier to get traction on that,
well,
as it turns out.
If you happen to get the right jury and the right judge,
that's
a whole other thing.
That is. Anyway, it's interesting. I think that it like is in also some ways this sort of a like bellwether for, you know, a lot of this
Surf
stuff.
Folk is in Latvia. So I have no idea what the laws are.
Well, and like, and whether this is going to be something related to Google and YouTube, so it would be settled in U.S. law because we're talking about that, their platform. I'm not sure.
This is an interesting
bellwether, right? Like, it's like another time where these sort of weird like thrown together relationships between giant corporations and people mm-hmm. who just sort of started making videos in their room that then yeah. get elevated to being like uh-huh. professional spokespeople, sort of, but they're not. And like they're not being paid, but maybe they are being paid, and like they're uh-huh. being paid in weird ways, and like all of this stuff that's happening.
And they're really young.
Yeah, a lot of them are really young and they don't know, and they're not, like, you know, and they're vulnerable, probably, like not making a ton of money. This is the first time they've had a job. They can't believe it. Suddenly they're being threatened. They're like, if you get this copyright strike, you're fucked. You better yeah. do what we say. It's uh-huh. just like you can scale it up and change the variables and turn it into anybody being told what to do by a major corporation, which is like increasingly seem like it's where things are going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's scary. But yeah, I do think that technically, if any video game company wanted to issue a copyright strike for a YouTuber using their footage, they could. And like, if one day all the video game companies decide like they don't want people right. using their footage on YouTube anymore for whatever reason,
I wonder.
I think they could do that.
Because you can contest a copyright strike, and then I think
I'm saying but I'm saying from a copyright perspective, I believe that, and I could be if a lawyer wants to contact us and make sure that we're getting this correct.
Great, I'm sure any lawyers listening to this is already saying like, wow, these guys are faking it right now.
But as far as copyright laws, I believe that like you can't just put up movie footage on your YouTube channel, and I think video games would be considered the same thing where you
right.
I mean, like, look at Atlus, for example. Atlus is going after streamers and YouTubers, and
Atlus has said they'll go after streamers and YouTubers, and that is an important distinction because
sure.
the practical aspect of like going after however many right. thousands of YouTubers there are,
right.
if 10% of them contest your claim, suddenly you're going to court, or you're like, you know, you have to actually go and fight them on it, and then that gets really expensive really fast. So like,
yeah, I was just thinking about the technically legal aspect of it, not the practical elements or the moral ethical questions.
Oh no, I just mean like the likelihood of it happening.
Yeah,
a lot of times does impact the legal aspect of it. Like some things don't go to court just because it's not practical to be, you know,
at some point we should bring on a lawyer on the show.
That would be a really good idea. I think that would, just to talk about like IP law and all of this stuff, yeah. I think would be really cool.
Okay, I have some ideas. All right, we'll get to that. Anyway, let's move on to the next news story.
Nice.
Red Dead Redemption 2, most obvious prediction ever. I think this was we banned our predictions.
This was a banned prediction.
Red Dead Redemption 2 is delayed to 2018. I think everybody in the world, except for maybe Rockstar, saw this coming.
What's funny is, I don't know if I've ever said this on the show, but I have said this in real life, that I, for some reason, was like, I'm just going to be crazy and think that maybe it's actually going to come out this fall. I really did. Like, it was the first time I was like, I know it's going to get delayed, but maybe it won't. I think maybe it won't. Totally wrong on that one.
So. Zero chance of that happening.
Yeah.
I think it will hit like next April or May. I think there's a good chance of that actually hitting.
Oh yeah, I think so. That's when their games always come out.
Yeah, and their games always come out in May. Well, GTA came out in September, but regardless, I think May will be a really good date for that. That's a good thing, I think. I don't know if you agree. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, but I think it's a really good thing because there's so many other games this year. Yeah. And also, really, it's interesting. If they wanted a game of the year, it would be a tough fight against Zelda. But like next year, I think they'll have a much stronger case because Zelda won't be in the way.
Yeah,
unless
but
some
mean,
other shit is.
Yeah, who knows? Like I think. Yeah, I mean, of course, anytime a game is delayed, it's to make the game better. I don't know. Like we were talking about this NeoGAF thread that aggregated a whole bunch of Glassdoor posts about Rockstar San Diego.
Yeah.
And then
like
the various things that I know you've heard that I've heard about Rockstar San Diego. The big picture is this place is like a pretty rough place to work, I think. And they work hard and they can grind people out. And like this game is definitely a ridiculous undertaking. So I tweeted this fucking screenshot of guns that they put on their website. With which you saw this picture, right? It's like these engraved revolvers that are the most absurdly detailed and beautiful guns I've ever seen. And like you zoom in on the screenshot and there's these like tiny imperfections in the metal and like the engraving is so detailed. It looks like a photograph. And it was incredible, like on a just like, wow, holy shit, that's incredible looking. But it's also, it's like a sign of just how much I remember we were talking about Horizon and talking about how Aloy is like, it's something about her like incredible outfits or something and the ways they
move. The animations.
And you made this crack like, and just think someone probably crunched for like a month to make that work. And I have the same thought about, like, somebody spent however long, like, making the gun revolver chamber rotate perfectly and have the light cast off it in the right way. And it just, I don't know, when a game like this is delayed, you know it's because they're running up against their deadline and they're trying to get everything done. And of course this game is going to be, like, super ambitious. And I am aware of that. Watching this delay happen, that there are a lot of people working really fucking hard on this game, and that they're going to be working mm-hmm. for another 6 months or more than they would have been.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's rough because every time a game is delayed, if you're crunching, the worst delays, I think, for the developers are those final, like, hey, we're getting a few more weeks to polish, because it's like, yes, we get to make this game better, but also we're already working 100-hour weeks. And
we were, like, crunching with this target in mind of, say, September, and now the mm-hmm. target is 8 months. It's like, or 5 months later, and it's like, great, we can make a better game, but also we're going to be, I'm not going to see my family for the next, you know, for another 6 months, which, so, you know.
It's tough. It's like, it's one of those systemic issues that we'll just keep talking about where the games industry just burns people out, and who knows how many talented people have just been lost because of the lifestyle of game developers, and how many good games are just never going to happen because those people are just gone and burnt out. And
It was something that Brett Duvel, who we had on a few weeks ago. I thought I really liked what he said, where he said, basically, you know, he's been in the industry for 20 years, which doesn't exactly make him a salty dog, but by games industry standards, he sort of is. And mm-hmm. he was saying there's this mentor problem where he's like, GDC is sort of a remedy for this, but there's this problem where there are these studios that will just bring in really young people and just grind them out, and then they just burn out in 2 or 3 years and quit and go do something else. And there's this kind of constant brain drain as a result. And there aren't those older people who've been around and can kind of mentor you and say, hey, look, don't do this, like, look for a place that's like this, don't let them tell you this. And kind of all of those lessons that you would think would be very important don't always get shared, which is probably a big problem.
There's a lack of institutional knowledge in the games industry. Yeah, we can also save this for another episode's conversation. We should do... I guess we already did that Crunch episode with Matthew Burns. Oh, that was a fun one. People should go back and listen to that.
That was
us
good.
Talking... I think we called it 80-hour work weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. Back when... What's-his-face? The Microsoft dude said some nonsense about Crunch, about how back in the day...
Now I'm forgetting who it was. It wasn't the thing of the, like, we ordered this many pizzas. That was Crytek, right?
That was
Crytek. We ordered this many pizzas for people who couldn't be home for dinner with their families.
Yeah. I'm looking up the guy's name. Alex St. John, that was the guy's name. He was co-creator of DirectX. And he wrote this terrible article.
It
was last April,
that.
And we
that
brought up Matthew Burns.
It was bad. Yeah, Crunch, that was some bad content.
Yeah, but I've always felt like Crunch is a nuanced subject, and I don't think there are easy answers.
No, of course. Well, I mean, like, and while I'm partly tweeting the Red Dead Redemption guns to point out how absurd it is, they're also amazing looking. And I mean, I bet Red Dead Redemption is going to be, like, fucking amazing. Like, the screenshots even of that game were just, like, enchanting and amazing looking. So it is this sort of... you have to take the good with the bad on that, and, you know, acknowledge how hard people are going to work, but they're going to make something probably pretty incredible.
One last news story for the day.
Yes.
It is Overwatch's anniversary, and they have an anniversary event this week with a whole bunch of skins and emotes and other bullshit like that that people, Overwatch players, somehow eat up and spend hundreds of dollars buying. It's cool that it feels like Overwatch came out way longer than a year ago, but it's only been a year. It already has become a cultural touchstone. It's pretty crazy how Blizzard just created this iconic series out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think about that whenever I see, you know, Overwatch gets referenced in pop culture now. Like, it gets referenced in the way that World of Warcraft does. Like, I'll see it on TV shows or something, or, like, people will just mention it. When I go
out
there,
you've seen it on a TV show, really?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to remember what it was. Or, like, when I'll go out with people, you know, a friend of a friend or something, a lot of times that's the game they want to talk about. That's what they're playing is Overwatch. And it's interesting. I've had friends who, from music school, who don't really play games, who got into Overwatch. Like, people really, that game really landed. I think in the way Blizzard wanted it to, which is impressive.
It's really, I don't think anyone there expected this, because keep in mind, Overwatch, I mean, the story of Overwatch is just incredible. Like, there could be a book just on Overwatch. It's because it came out of the ashes of this game, Titan, that had just gone through this hellish 7-year development cycle, and they canceled in 2013 and took a small team from it and was like, all right, see if you can make this small thing. And I think they were very close to just getting canned completely, and instead they came out with this phenomenon.
It would be fascinating to ask them to get like a good answer, which I would imagine there's a lot of bad answers, like, oh, we're really proud of the project and we're excited, and but like to get a really good answer from someone, like an honest answer about that, because that would be fascinating if they thought the game wasn't going to do well. And then just suddenly everyone's in love with all these characters and like freaking out, and there's this huge passionate fandom, and that would be
what I remember hearing is that I think a few months before it came out, like when it was announced, I think they had a feeling it was going to be big because it got such a crazy reaction when it was like people loved it as soon as it was announced.
I remember that like first Pixar ass video, people lost it. Yeah.
But before that, I don't think people knew. But I do know that a lot of people at Blizzard were playing it, and because they would all just like play it for fun during their lunch breaks or whatever, like, man, this is a good game. Yeah, they knew it at the time. And man, Blizzard is just so good at making video games.
Right, that's the thing, is they must know on some level. There's like a Blizzard fandom in a way that I don't know that there really is for almost any other studio. Like if Blizzard announces a new game... Yeah, that's true. And so if Blizzard announces a new game, like people are just going to line up for it. Like it's going to be a big deal.
Right.
And did you read the thing about this? I know this isn't a news story, but the article about Hearthstone, the Hearthstone salt cycle that we ran from our freelancer. I'll find it.
No, tell me about it.
Hearthstone players are trapped in a cycle of salt.
Actually, I think that might have been the game I was thinking of where they really didn't think that was going to be a success, or they had no idea it was going to... That's another cultural icon cultural touchstone that has just become, like, out of nowhere, just blew people's minds when it came out.
It's a fascinating one because Hearthstone... So this is by Joshua Calixto, who writes about Hearthstone for us. Mm-hmm. And that's a game, like, I remember it was, like, Max Reed, when he was still editor at Gawker, played a ton of Hearthstone, and sometimes he'll just tweet... Max is, like, you know, just like a media dude, who then will just tweet these extremely nerdy things about like the Hearthstone meta, and I have no idea what the fuck he's talking about. Like it's like when we tweet about Destiny or somebody else tweets about Dota or something. And which is another sign of like that's another game where like there are people who play Hearthstone and don't play any other games really, and that's their main thing, and it's got this huge community. And it was interesting just to read the article. It's about how, you know, it's about a pretty standard cycle, I think, for games like this. Like the new expansion comes out, a new meta emerges, the meta grows stale, people get angry, people get angrier, a new expansion comes out, people are excited again. Like it's kind of about that cycle, which could be applied to any game, but was a reminder that there's this fucking card game that Blizzard came up with that is still like the hugest deal that a ton of people still play.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. All right, why don't we bring on Dan and
you mean
find
Alex?
Out
bring on Alex Navarro
bring in Alex Navarro and find out what the deal is with all that Taco Bell.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey, I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And we're the hosts of Lifehacker's podcast, The Upgrade. On The Upgrade, we help you improve your life one week at a time. We talk to guests like former hacker Hector Monsegur about online security.
You need to be aware of how you could be attacked. You need to be aware of what's your weakness.
And Alan Alda on how to communicate more effectively.
And in order to achieve that, we start with teaching exercises derived from improvisation.
And sex therapist Steven Snyder about how to have great sex in a long-term relationship.
What really works under those circumstances is if you enjoy the other person selfishly.
Hey, your life? It's terrible. We can help.
Find The Upgrade wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Reichert is a senior editor at Giant Bomb, but he might be best known as, what's the name of your wrestling character?
It's just Dirty Dan Reichert.
Dirty Dan Reichert, that's what he might be best known as.
Although I have not officially worked in the New York territory yet, so that may just be staying on the West Coast for now.
What do you mean? You have to change your character when you move to
New York? No, I could keep the character for sure. There's no like actual legal things there. Uh-huh. I just don't have a promotion that I work for out here, so
okay.
He has only appeared on the West Coast loop right now.
Well, Dan Reichert is here. Welcome to the show, Dan. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And welcome to the East Coast. You recently moved out here.
A few months ago.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
I love it here.
It is a good... And most importantly, you are getting married by Taco Bell, which is the main reason that we brought you here today.
It's it will be my legacy, I hope.
I hope so too.
I think I may have peaked with this.
So let me just ask, as someone who knows, Jason mentioned something about Taco Bell in your wedding, but I'm actually a little bit out of the loop on this. I would imagine that it's a fair bet that there may be a few listeners who also are. So Dan, could you maybe explain to us what it means that you're getting married by Taco Bell?
Yes. So Taco Bell, typically not known for marrying people. They're actually more famous for serving food.
Really good Mexican food?
The best Mexican food in America. So they basically, I've talked about Taco Bell enthusiastically for years and years and years at Game Informer and on Giant Bomb, and it's just out of a genuine love for Taco Bell. It has been my favorite food pretty much my entire life. And so all of a sudden one day, I think it was like a day before Valentine's Day this year, or maybe it was on Valentine's Day, I got a billion tweets from people saying, Dan, you have to enter this, because they knew that I was engaged and I hadn't said anything publicly about like if we had made a date or where or when we were getting married. And so it was this Taco Bell contest called the Love and Tacos Contest. And the winner gets to be the first couple married in the new Taco Bell Wedding Chapel in Las Vegas.
Well, hold on a second. How much of your love for Taco Bell is genuine versus 100%. Played up?
You know, there are certain things that I've played up, you know, when the red light's on or something. I certainly will, and I'll admit to anything that I am, you know, playing up. But when it comes down to it, when I say I love something, I'm saying it because I love it. And Taco Bell, when I say it's my favorite food of all time, I mean that 100%.
So I have a couple, we're going to get more into the wedding thing. I have a couple of Taco Bell specific questions for
Let's
you.
Let's do it.
For starters, which type of Taco Bell hot sauce is the best?
Fire.
Fire, really? I like
hot sauce. It's all okay, but hot sauce is fine, but I think fire is the best. They did the Diablo sauce thing a while ago, but that tasted weird.
Yeah, no, I was not into that. I had a little bit of that. That was when I haven't had Taco Bell in a little while, but I did have the Diablo sauce and agree with you. Okay, next question. What do you get when you go to Taco Bell?
On a standard Taco Bell visit
Taco
Bell visit?
Oh, like average, not when you're feeling exciting. Okay. Just when you're having a normal meal at Taco Bell.
The average visit is, the one I get pretty much every single time is the chicken quesadilla. That is the bedrock of a visit. I will typically get a cheesy gordita crunch, although that's not every time. The quesadilla is every time, then I usually get two more items, or three sometimes, depending on how hungry I am. If they have any like new gimmick items or whatever, like, oh, we just advertised the quesalupa during the Super Bowl, or the triple steak stack or something, I will certainly get that. Double D, the triple double crunch wrap, all that stuff. I get all those things. I'm trying to think of other favorites. The cheesy roll-up is a great add-on if you want to get like a fourth thing. It's a bunch of cheese and a tortilla, and it's
great.
By
the way, this podcast is not sponsored by Taco Bell.
It is not. Nor am I, actually. I've never taken a dollar from Taco Bell.
You just have a thing on your shirt that says brought to you by Taco Bell.
Well, I think my marriage is sponsored by Taco Bell.
Right, that's good.
I guess that's true.
How are you not 400 pounds?
You know, it probably sounds like I eat this stuff all the time, which is... That was the case when I was growing up. I probably had Taco Bell, McDonald's 7 to 10 times a week growing up.
That's insane.
And then you get older. You know, I'm 32 going on 33 here. Your metabolism slows down. And so I got to kind of pick and choose when I'm having it. And I also, you know, try to work out a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
So I have one more Taco Bell question before you get on with your story. And I'm curious if what your answer to this is. What is the best Taco Bell ad campaign of all time? What is your favorite?
You know, I think the answer a lot of people would go with is the Yokiro Taco Bell.
Oh, but yeah, that was a good one.
But I only have hazy memories of this other one I'm thinking of. But I remember when the double-decker taco was first coming out in the early 90s and Shaquille O'Neal was like the biggest star on the planet. I vaguely remember Shaquille O'Neal maybe being on the nacho cheese variant of the double-decker commercials, which I'll have to go back and check. I've not seen that in like 25 years. That was good. Also, I think the fourth meal campaign was pretty good because they know their audience and they are totally right about that. Yeah. So I think they're pretty on point with a lot of those.
Nice.
I've been living cool. Moss since I was a child.
What about the Dan Reichert viral advertising campaign?
Yeah, the Kotaku split screen sponsored episode.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Dan Reichert sponsored one because that's getting me a wedding. So
okay, so yeah, so you entered this contest and then you won.
Yes.
It must be because you have the biggest platform of anyone who...
You know, a lot of people have said that, and, you know, I was not sitting in the meetings when they decided who won. Like, the top 10 were decided on based on votes, mm-hmm. and then the Taco Bell judges decided the ultimate winner. Mm. And I had plenty of people bring up, like, oh, well, he's already got this following and everything. That's obviously why they picked him. But I looked around at everyone else, and there was somebody that had, like, 4 or 5 times more followers than I do on Instagram and YouTube. It was this girl that had, like, a huge, much, much bigger following than I do across everything, pretty much. So it can't solely be that.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know how much that played into their decision or anything, but their judging criteria that I looked at before I entered, it seemed like I'd be a really good fit because it was like 40% enthusiasm for the brand, which I've documented evidence of that for a long time. 30% is public appeal, and people seem to really like the video and everything that we put out. Uh-huh. And then 30% was, I think, creativity for like the entry. And okay. I was one of the few that did like a video entry.
Did you have any kind of a sense what the? I'm picturing the panel of like the Chihuahua and Shaq, and they're all sitting in a boardroom and they're looking at videos of you on Giant Bomb or whatever.
One of
like,
them is just the cheesy gordita crunch. Yeah, like, come
yeah
to
just
life,
a talking gordita.
Well, it's Yum Brand, so the Colonel might be on the board too. I'm not sure.
Right, that's true. Yeah.
Which Colonel? There are like 40 celebrities.
It could be all of them. I'm not sure. It's a rotating door.
Okay. So what does it mean exactly to have a wedding sponsored by Taco Bell? So you're going to do it at the church. Are they catering? Are they like providing the decorations?
Yeah. I've seen the menu and it's a really obscene amount of food considering it's a very tiny place. So I was only able to bring like a very small amount of like very close family and friends. Uh-huh. And yet the menu is like 65 Crunchwraps. I'm not exaggerating. 65 like burritos, 65 jalapeno cheesy dipper things, which I've never seen on the menu. That might be a secret wedding only thing. And then they asked me and Bianca what our favorite menu items are. So I said chicken quesadilla and cheese gordita crunch and she's getting some Doritos Locos Tacos. So we're going to get like 65 of every item for like a dozen people.
Bianca is like as big a Taco Bell fan as you are.
It's one of the first conversations we ever had over text is because we met online and we had to text for a little bit before we met because she was out east, I was out west. Mm-hmm. And we both brought up that we love Taco Bell and she said, oh, I would take Taco Bell over a fancy Mexican place, you know, 100 out of 100 times. And I was like, perfect, this is going great. And then I actually sent her the Taco Bell thing as a joke, the contest, because, you know, I thought it was a funny idea, but I didn't know if she would, you know, be willing to get married there. Uh-huh. And so I sent her the tweet from the Lovin' Tacos contest, and I was like, oh, hey, we should do this. We don't have a venue yet. And she was like, fuck yeah, let's do it. Like, okay, all right. Yeah, I'm definitely marrying you.
Amazing. Okay, and they're catering. Is there, when you get there, is it going to be like a Taco Bell, like, minister who marries you guys?
I think they definitely have to set that up because in the early days of me talking to them, I was trying to see if I could pay out of my own pocket to get Ric Flair to be the officiant.
Oh my God.
And they had to look into that, which is funny to me. And I guess there are strict rules in Vegas for who can be the official at a wedding, which fucking Elvis impersonators
can
do it.
You wouldn't think that would be true.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But apparently that was a whole to-do, so they definitely have the officiant. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of other stuff involved. Like we're getting dinner at some Gordon Ramsay steakhouse.
Oh, wow.
We got a private...
Sounds better than Taco Bell.
Sounds good, too. It's a private cabana at a pool, a spa day, big Ferris wheel tickets, some spending money. Trying to think what else.
This is amazing. And they're putting you up in a hotel. And they're
hotel,
like,
flights.
For all your guests, too?
For six. So me and her and both sets of parents are going to get free hotel and airfare.
Do you get any kind of like free Taco Bell for life or anything like that?
No, I get a Taco Bell branded champagne flutes, or is it flumes? Whatever the wedding thing is, flutes, it'll have Taco Bells on them. Mm-hmm. I think I get a T-shirt, and she's getting a Taco Bell branded garter, and I get a Taco Bell branded bow tie. So we'll get those as keepsakes.
I think that you also get the right to any time you go to a Taco Bell and you get bad service, you can cry out, "Do you know who I am?"
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I do
and,
that
like,
anyway.
Show a picture of it. Yeah. And like forever, for life, you can do that, and they have to acknowledge that you're a big deal in Taco Bell.
I feel like the guy marrying you, your officiant or minister or whatever, should actually be Jeff Keighley dressed up as the Doritos Los Tacos.
That's some great branding there with that Doritos taco. Yeah, that's fantastic. So
that's incredible. You must be excited about this.
I'm thrilled. I mean, it's just one of those things where I saw the contest and I saw the rules, and I was thinking, like, when I asked Bianca if she's sure she wants to do it, I was like, I want to make sure, because I think if we enter, and I've never said this about a giant nationwide contest before, I think we're going to win this thing. Because just everything
just
seemed to be
inevitable.
Right there in place, and sure enough, we were worried about a couple other entrants. There were some other really good ones. There was this girl that made a whole wedding dress out of burrito wrappers that was really cool.
Ooh.
But no, in the end, we got it. I was standing in line for the King Kong ride at Universal Studios, and I got the message.
That's a really good place to find out that you won a contest.
Yeah, during a rain delay. So yeah, I'm getting rained on in the King Kong line.
Yeah,
it was great.
Quality.
That is amazing. I'm in the middle of planning a wedding right now, and the amount of money that I have to spend makes me very jealous that you don't have to spend any.
Yeah. Well, still taxes.
Okay, fine. You have to pay taxes on what they give you?
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. I'm not complaining, and I'll have the story for the rest of my life. So
that's true. I hope your guests like Taco Bell. That's
my dad is thrilled.
Man, he must be. Yeah.
And my mom managed one for a while when I was a kid.
Your dad is actually a character in many of your shows, and
he is definitely a character. he was definitely he was in town this weekend. It was his first visit to New York City, so he actually left a couple days ago.
I bet he had a lot of funny things to say about the city.
He is very much a Kansas man, and he thinks that New York City has the most confusing street layout of any city he's ever seen.
What?
And I tried to explain to him that it's a grid system made of numbers, and it's impossible to get
really lost.
He's like, no. Kansas, just you know the street names. It's like, you know the street names because he lived there for 54 years. Right. Like, it's not confusing
New York
at all.
Is the most easy, like, it's the simplest layout of any street, any city in the country.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
The thing he talked about the most was definitely the $20 pastrami sandwich he got at Katz's Deli. In Kansas, you know, I see him on Facebook posting pictures like, oh, look at this. Wendy's is, you know, $4 for a double cheeseburger and 10 nuggets. Like, this is how it should be, Kansas, and like, not this New York stuff. And,
oh, man.
Yeah.
So you, as a senior editor at Jai Bomb, your job is to play games, make videos, entertain people. I guess you would consider yourself an entertainer.
Yes,
is that
completely.
Your basic job description.
That's what I say when people ask me, like when family members that don't really follow gaming ask me. I do say I'm just an entertainer that focuses on video game content.
So your day to day at Giant Bomb is what exactly? Like, what? How would you spend an average day at Giant Bomb?
So we get in, and usually at the beginning of the day, we're kind of looking at what's going on, and you know, we're checking emails, we're seeing what's going on in the industry. You know, sometimes a game will come out of nowhere. That we didn't hear about. Like, great example, Stardew Valley. It was my favorite game of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never heard of it until I went into work one day, and it was getting some buzz, and Jeff told me, like, hey, this Stardew Valley game is getting a lot of buzz. You want to check it out for a quick look? So I go in there, I download it, I play some of it, and once I feel like I'm far enough in to talk intelligently about it, we record a video for it. And that's it. It's a lot of seeing what games are out. Like, there are the obvious ones that we know months ahead of time that are going to be a big deal. And we occasionally do reviews. Like, I reviewed Breath of the Wild. Was my last one. But, yeah, it's just a lot of staying on top of the new releases and making sure we're covering them both in video form and talking about them on the podcast, which we've got the Beastcast out east and we've got the Bombcast out west.
Right, yeah. Are you guys – do you have to do a certain number of videos every day or every week? Do you have any sort of quota like that?
It's not a quota like that. We have certain things like running series that we do. So Vinny and I do this thing called This Is the Run, where we take a defined challenge. And, you know, the first time it was beating Contra without the 30 lives code. And we see how many episodes we – you know, each episode is one run. And then when we die, the episode's over.
Uh-huh.
Or we're playing through all of Yakuza 0 right now. So we do about 2 hours every Monday of Yakuza. So we kind of set our own schedules with that stuff, you know, whatever makes the most sense for all of us. But it's not like a quota system or anything.
Mm, you're making a lot of people jealous who don't get to go to an office and play video games all day as part of their job.
It's a good deal. Yeah.
So you guys are doing the videos. I think one of my favorite Giant Bomb pieces of content in the past few years was when you and Jeff rolled out Roller Coaster and were playing 3DS games.
Right.
Mario 3.
Yeah, yeah.
The Roller Coaster. That was fun. I hope you do more ridiculous, like dangerous shit like that in the near future.
I've wanted to, and I've had some ideas for a few years, but we'll see. You know, those things don't just come together. You can't just wake up and go do that the way you can record a normal video.
I'm curious a little bit about how you guys handle pre-production and how much like work goes into a video, like a given video, before you just sit down and do it. Because a lot of the charm, I think, of you guys' videos, what I like about them is how the ones that are just really off the cuff, and I think that's what people like, mm-hmm. right? It's really like spontaneous. You're hanging out with your friends.
Yeah, we try to, you know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, you're right in that we don't really script anything out. Like, one of us will have a good understanding of the game to kind of, like, drive the quick look or something. And a lot of times it's just like, hey, Alex, come on this thing. I want to show you Dead Cells or this game I'm working on. So, yeah.
Which is it strikes me as a good format, is that one person always seems like they're kind of familiar with the game and they're playing it and they're showing it to somebody else. Like, the other person sort of becomes the audience proxy and they're... So you're talking about it and you're saying, well, this is this and this is that. And you're sort of explaining what's going on, which if you were both super hardcore and just playing and like nerding out about, like if Jason and I both played Destiny and someone who'd never played Destiny watched it, they wouldn't get that same experience that we would be like nerding out about stupid shit that they don't even understand.
Right.
So it seems like what is a Fatebringer?
Right. When we're like, blah, 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 Grimoire score.
Yeah.
Blah, blah.
Yeah.
Is that like a conscious thing like that you try to structure that way, or does it just kind of shake out that way?
It just kind of shakes out that way, because sometimes there are games that, you know, multiple people on the video have played a lot of. Like, I think recently we did the Mario Kart 8 quick look, and Benny was the one who hadn't played it yet, and Alex and I had played a ton of it, both Deluxe and the original one. So, you know, sometimes more than one person has a good knowledge of it. Other times, you know, if it's a pre-release thing, like when I reviewed Breath of the Wild, I played that for probably 15, 16 hours a day for the first week. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like deep in this Zelda cave for a long time. And I just wanted to scream to anyone that would listen about how good that game was.
I know, I remember we were DMing about crazy it. Holy shit. Yeah.
Fun times. So that's interesting when you're the one driving the quick look. And it's like, all right, I'm going to sit down with Vinny and Alex, who have not played this game yet. And where do I fucking start with talking about all the stuff going on in this game?
Yeah. Where did you start? Where did you start to show them Breath of the Wild?
Oh, geez. We actually broke it into two different parts. One near the beginning of the game, just to kind of show how it's structured with trying to get all the orbs to get off the island and everything. And then I loaded up my like near end game thing where I'd beaten several divine beasts and I had some of the powers and everything. But yeah, that was a longer one since obviously there is a lot to talk about with that game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So something we've talked about on our show a few times is the way that fans interact with their favorite media personalities. And at Kotaku, things are a little bit different. We're a little bit more anonymous because it's just our names. And sometimes people know who me and Kirk are and Steven Totillo and a couple other recognizable people. But it's not the same as like a video personality site. So something I've always been curious about with you guys is like, how do you deal with sort of the fans' expectations that you guys should be on all of the time, and kind of like the idea that so many people out there, so many strangers out there almost feel like they know you and like have a right to you?
You know, you just have to go into it knowing how passionate a lot of Giant Bomb fans are.
Mm-hmm. And passionate is one way to describe it.
No, I mean, I think they're great. And, you know, like any fandom, there are going to be some people that are just like crazy, crazy into it and everything. Right, yeah. But like, I really think we have a great community. And when I came in, I knew that there was going to be arguments on message boards about me. I knew that there was going to be people that didn't like me. I mean, you see that, you know, there are several different forums, you know, our official ones and unofficial ones that I look at on a regular basis. And you just kind of see it across the board, like, oh, I hate when this person's on something, but I love this. And like, oh, I like this coast, but not this coast or whatever. So that's just how it's going to be. You know, if you watch SNL, there are going to be cast members you don't like as much as other ones.
Sure.
So that's just kind of how it goes. It has not bothered me. And we do meet and greet stuff a lot. We do PAX panels. And I've had just tons and tons of interactions with our fans. And, you know.
Have you ever had any real creepers come up to you and do anything really strange?
Nothing like crazy. I've had, you know, sometimes you'll just get the people at a meet and greet that aren't quite as, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, if there's a lot of people waiting around to meet you or get a picture or something real quick, there's some people that don't really respect time as much. Mm. Some people want to go in, get an autograph and a picture or something, say a couple anecdotes about something that meant a lot to them or made them laugh or something.
Yeah.
But then some will sit around and, like, while there's a line of people waiting to, you know, talk just to you, talk, like, they'll talk for
right, it's
like 20 minutes.
You're wrong about Far Cry 4.
Yeah.
And I'm
yeah.
Like, you know, I don't this out to make sure I got it right. I'm going to read the whole thing to you.
Yeah.
I don't get as much at Giant Bomb as far as like opinions on video game stuff as I did at Game Informer, because Game Informer was way more like writing reviews and things like that, and that's where you'd be like, how dare you not like Call of Duty Declassified for Vita? And you know, like I did have a guy say he was going to wait outside the Game Informer office and he's going to turn my mouth into an orgy of teeth and blood because he loves Call of Duty Declassified for Vita, and that game rocks him harder than my girlfriend ever could.
Wow.
That's the email I got. So
there's a lot of nuance in that.
Yeah, he really liked that Vita Call of Duty.
Yeah, really creepy attack email.
Yeah.
So how does working at Giant Bomb compare? Because you spent a long time at Game Informer.
I was there for 5 years,
Yeah.
I've been at Giant Bomb for about 3 now. I like it a lot better here, for sure. Game Informer was my initial dream job because, you know, I started subscribing to that when I was 9. I you know, worked at Funko Land, GameStop, and, you know, sold those subscriptions for years. Mm-hmm. I shot a commercial for Game Informer when I was 18. I called up their national headquarters and convinced them before the days of YouTube and stuff that, hey, I do a bunch of video editing and stuff. I'd love to shoot a commercial for you guys for free if you'll fly me to Minnesota and let me meet the staff. Like, that was just kind of my way of meeting, like, Andy McNamara and Reiner and those guys and try to, you know, start them to know my name, but I wound up shooting the commercial for them.
Interesting.
Then I started reviewing games in college and everything, going to E3, and every year I would try to bug Andy McNamara for a job and all that. Eventually he did hire me. You know, I had a great time.
The
there.
Lesson here is bug someone until they hire you. And
yes.
That's the way.
The lesson is also start young. It's you. I know you have had a well-documented rivalry with Patrick Klepek over Super Mario Maker, and Klepek's story is different but a little similar in that he also started very young and was this like precocious, you know, going after everybody and being really confident sort of youngster that made a good impression.
Yeah, Andy told me when I got hired, he said it was persistence because, you know, I bugged him at every E3. I emailed him year-round pretty much every year. Being like, hey, are you hiring now? Are you hiring now? You remember me? Hey, I've written another 100 reviews since the last time we talked. So
the problem is you are right now giving many thousands of people bad ideas about how to break in.
Not entirely, though, right? Like, there are writers that have pitched me or Steven or somebody, and you know, like their first pitch doesn't land and they just keep pitching, and eventually if they
well,
keep
that's
coming
different.
At you and they have good ideas, like you do, you know, persistence pitching does
is a little
help
different.
Well, yeah, I wasn't bugging just to bug. Like every time I did, I would give them an update on like, okay, I've written this many more reviews since last time we talked, you know, I think
that's
my writing has improved, I think I've done a lot more,
right.
So that was the angle. I wasn't just like prodding him with a stick like, hey, hire me, you know. Well, I did some of that too.
Yeah, I've gotten some people who do the latter approach. Hire me approach.
I like it a lot more now, you know, because I've always liked the entertaining personality stuff more. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I love reading the news and reviews and things like that. But when I was a Game Informer, you know, we started getting more cameras and studio space and things like that. And I wanted to do way more personality-focused stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was always told, you know, like, this isn't Game Informer. We just need to be the straight-faced. You know, we were just giving the news across. And I kind of saw the way things were going. Like, YouTube started rising up. And I saw what Giant Bomb was doing. And they were getting these personalities over huge. And it's when I started doing the Bombcast at E3. I used to go on as a guest. Jeff and Ryan would invite me on. And I realized, like, man, this is so much more the tone of what I want to do. Just this kind of freewheeling, like these E3 things, just get some friends together and grab some beers and just bullshit and go down, you know, comedic tangents and all this stuff. Mm. And that's kind of when I started being like, I think I'd rather be over there. Mm. And sure enough, I do like it a lot better here.
Yeah, it's interesting. It feels like a lot of groups these days are kind of copying the Giant Bomb successful formula. And it's interesting. It's good to see you guys still plugging along and keeping it up. Are you guys, like, still doing well? Are things good at CBS these days?
Yeah, you know, I don't handle a lot of the, like, business facing stuff. Like, it seems like Jeff and Vinny deal with a lot more of that, and a lot of meetings and numbers and things like that.
All the fun stuff.
Right. I'm on the content side of things for sure, you know. So when I'm not getting a game ready, I'm thinking of ideas for recurring features and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little insulated from all the business side of things, but, you know, we just brought on a couple new hires. I think we're about to hire another one out west.
Cool.
Since Drew Scanlon just left. But yeah, things are looking great.
Drew became a meme. And he was just like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Peace.
Drew Scanlon, for those listeners who aren't familiar, is the blinking white guy meme.
It's the weirdest thing.
Former dive bomb turned meme. Turned
yes. Really? And I mean everywhere.
Really?
On politics Twitter, I see his blinking face constantly.
It's
just
so
like
funny.
People who have nothing to do and don't know who he is, still always there.
At first, I thought it was just going to be like a game industry thing, and I would see the occasional, like, oh, this tweet got pretty popular, and look, there's Drew. Weird. Mm-hmm. And then, like, my dad knew about it. My dad recognized Drew from the videos I've done, and it just was everywhere. It was insane. But he's doing some really exciting sounding stuff right now. He did a Patreon where he's flying around the world talking about games. And it should be cool.
So one of the interesting things about how you fit into Giant Bomb is that somehow you have not done a lot of things that normal people have done, or you are, like, ignorant about things. Things that normal people
that's fair.
Know.
That's fair.
I've always been curious about like how much of that is you playing it up and how much of that is you having never eaten an egg or...
Yeah, what kind of things are you talking about? That was an extremely broad statement.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember examples.
Well, I mean, there have been a lot of them. I've
never
actually
eaten a vegetable.
No, nothing that great. I mean, there are plenty of individuals.
Never eaten Taco Bell.
Like, all that stuff is true. So, like, you know, until I was 25 or whatever, I had never had ketchup or mustard or onions or pickles or relish or sour cream or cream cheese or, you know, a wide variety of things. I never had a salad until I was, like, 27. You know, everything I ordered at Taco Bell or McDonald's was always meat and cheese only.
Okay. Somehow you were still alive and in shape.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a beer gut going on, but... Yeah, all that stuff's true. So my thing is, I'm fine with playing stuff up. I never lie about things. So if I say, I have never tried this thing, or I never did this thing until now, I mean that. I'm not embellishing big, crazy stories or anything. Or it's all true. And I think I am really dumb about a certain amount of things, because I feel like if life was an actual like skill point system, I feel like I just funneled everything I had into knowledge and love of video games and pro wrestling and just put zero skill points into like just caring about schoolwork or learning about how to cook a thing, you know, which I don't really regret it. I enjoy my life quite a bit. It's worked out career-wise for me.
It has worked out for you. So, yeah, one thing I want to talk about before we have to go is pro wrestling. So neither Kirk nor I are wrestling fans at all, but I know that you have had a lot of involvement. So are you actually involved with the WWE these days?
No. I have friends at WWE, both like wrestler and like backstage types and everything, but I've never worked for them. I've appeared on Xavier Woods as a wrestler in the New Day.
He's like a big gamer.
Yeah. And I met him years and years and years ago before he was on the main roster, and we started talking about video games. And then we've just kind of been friends ever since. So when he started doing his YouTube show, Up, Up, Down, Down, he invited me on. I've been on two or three times now. He comes on our E3 stuff and everything. He's great. He's just a huge, huge gamer. And it's kind of cool for me, having grown up, watched these guys. Mm-hmm. And I've watched wrestling since I was a little kid. And they never felt like people you could relate to. I can't relate to Stone Cold Steve Austin or Bret Hart, like these giant, you know, athlete types or tough guys or whatever. But now, you know, we're at the point now where most of the roster is younger than me, and they grew up playing Super Nintendo or Mario Kart or Zelda or whatever. Uh-huh. So you got guys like Cody Rhodes and Xavier Woods that I'm friends with, and I can just talk to and relate to on this level of video games, which if this was 1997, I wouldn't have much to talk to Shawn Michaels about.
But
so.
You talk about having like a character on the West Coast and a promoter on the West Coast. Is that like you faking it or?
No. So what that is there's the WWE, but there's basically like the whole independent circuit. So there, go to any major city, there's going to be a bunch of little independent federations. You know, there's things. There's the bigger ones like Ring of Honor and stuff. And the ones I did out in California were ones like APW was the main one I worked with, and Hood Slam I did some stuff with. So there are like, think of it as like, I guess, farm leagues or minor league teams or something like WWE.
And when you say you did some stuff with, you mean you did some wrestling, like you got in the ring and
not full matches. I was a bad guy manager for a bad guy tag team.
So I
dressed up like a jerk and had Google Glass and all this stuff. And I basically tried to get the crowd mad at me until kids were throwing Skittles at me or people were threatening to beat me up. And it was fun. So I was basically just the bad guy on the side of the ring that like would slide things into the ring to help the bad guys cheat to win or whatever, or I'd run in there and you know the good guys would grab me or throw me down or something. Oh, you know, I was interfering in matches and just being a weasel basically.
I felt like in your rivalry with Klepek, you were kind of the heel, like you were kind
totally.
Of the villain, and that I'm guessing that was very deliberate, that you were kind of using the same
techniques. 100%. Like, I think Patrick is great. I've always gotten along great with Patrick. Okay. And actually, I felt bad at one point because I was leaning so hard into that heel persona, that bad guy thing. And we're at the end of one of them. I don't remember. But, you know, Patrick just did a really nice, heartfelt thing. Like, Dan, this has been really fun to do this with you. You know, we do all this stuff and we act like we're, you know, big enemies or whatever and blah, blah, blah. It was very, very nice. And I just stuck to the heel thing. And I was like, fuck you, Patrick. Like, all your stuff sucks. No one cares about what you do. Like, you know, and then it was right when I was done. I think I turned off the thing and Bianca looked at me like, man, you really stuck with that heel thing at the end there. And he was really nice. I was like, oh, cool. He was. Maybe I shouldn't have been that mean. So for the record, Patrick Klefik is great.
To zoom out a second, so what we're talking about is the Mario Maker rivalry, which lasted for a couple of years, which is you making these levels and Patrick had to go through them. And some of them were incredibly like tough. And you are actually a really talented Mario Maker creator.
I mean, I feel like I was more just like a troll in Mario Maker. I don't know. None of those were good levels. You know, I was just trying to envision the most pain in the ass levels you could ever imagine. Because
They were creative, though, I thought.
Yeah.
I think they were creative.
In the Kaizo sense of like making these really challenging levels, I feel like the fact that you could complete them and that he had this entertaining like gauntlet of like getting through them, I thought they were pretty incredible.
Thanks. I mean, it was, that was definitely my game of the year a couple years ago because Mario World is, you know, a top four game of all time for me. So you know, I'm very, very familiar with all the 2D Mario mechanics. So that game was a dream for me. Mm-hmm. I stuck with Mario World more because I thought you could do more with the cape and Yoshi and everything and the spin jump. There were different things.
A little better.
Yeah. Yeah, so I stuck with that for most of them, and I just was like, what would be the biggest pain in the ass thing I would have to do? But then it was tough, because every time I'd think of something super devious or difficult, I'd be like, hey, Patrick's going to suck at this. But then I'm like, oh, shit, I have to do this too.
Right, that's the problem.
Yeah, so
right.
There were nights where 6 or 8 hours, I'm just sitting there staying up till 4 or 5 in the morning, just getting right to the end, and then whatever last fuck you thing I put there, a spike or something, would kill me. And it was just so deflating. But then when you would pass it and upload it and know that I never have to play it again, but Patrick has to start playing it.
To watch him do it. Very good.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Like, so are you guys going to bring that back?
You know, we haven't talked about it or anything. Yeah, I haven't really played a whole lot of Mario Maker since the last big one we did. But who knows? Like, I would love for them to announce a Switch version. Yeah, because I would jump right back in there. I don't know what you add necessarily, if you add like the turnip stuff and carrying enemies of two, but that's a whole different set of ideas and everything. So,
yeah.
Or a 3D Mario Maker.
64,
which,
yeah.
Yeah, but that just introduces so many things that make it so much less user-friendly, which was beautiful part of Mario Maker is that it's so simple. There's no like I always loved the idea of Little Big Planet, but to start playing that game and actually designing levels, you need to watch so many videos, and even then it's not that user-friendly.
And even whereas, like, you don't have that shared language that you have with Mario, where we've all played so much Mario, we know the like verbs and the rules of Mario. Whereas Little Big Planet, it's like, oh, okay, there's like this weird plunger device. The fuck does that do? I've never
seen these floaty jumps and stuff. Where with Mario, you already know exactly. Okay, that's the Mario 3 jump. I know how to do that. And the raccoon tail, man, that game is one of my favorite experiences. Probably my whole life playing games. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and that was such a fun story. Just the constant different challenges that Patrick had to go. We actually had him on our show talking about it.
Oh yeah,
it helped that Patrick is very good at games like that too. I felt like that was a fun part of watching it. Is that he's an extremely skilled like 2D platformer like player, like, you know, Spelunky and games like that, he's very good at. So it was really fun just because he's very skilled, so there was that aspect of it too, just watching him
Our time at Giant Bomb barely overlapped. Like, we did like a couple Game of the Year podcasts together, but he left probably like 5 or 6 months after I came on board. But I had always gotten along with Patrick and I wanted to work with him. So it was kind of a cool way to, you know, off the clock, do some content with Patrick.
So we do have to wrap things up shortly, but you have also written a whole bunch of books. Do you want to tell people about them? Plug them a little bit?
Sure. I started with several very, very silly ones that if you want to read a book about an alligator in the Air Force, there's a couple called Air Force Gator 1 and 2. Those are very silly books, but I'm very glad I wrote them to kind of learn how to write and format a book and everything. The two, like, real books, I would say, are Anxiety as an Ally, which is a book that I wrote because I've had a pretty severe anxiety disorder since I was 18. So Anxiety as an Ally is kind of a part autobiography of my history with them and kind of the struggles that came from that. And then also a lot of tips that have kind of helped me do things like work in a career where I'm frequently on stage or talking on podcasts. podcast or in front of cameras, which is not
that's
an
really
easy
cool.
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why I wrote that one, because I wanted something, you know, if I had had something like that when I was first going through it, it would have helped me a lot, because I didn't know what panic disorders were.
Yeah.
And once I had a name to it and I realized I could look things up and talk to other people that had it, it helped a ton. So that's why I wrote that. And then the most recent one is called The Dumbest Kid in Gifted Class. Mm-hmm. And that is more of a like David Sedaris style, like, hey, here's, you know, a bunch of stories before I got into the gaming industry. Basically, growing up in Kansas, I've had a whole lot of silly things happen in my life, and so I wrote – that's definitely my biggest book. So yeah, that's The Dumbest Kid in Gifted Class. They're all on Amazon.
And anything else coming in the near future?
You know, I don't actively have one. I've got some notes, like very entry-level notes, kind of outline type stuff that I'm working on, but I think we're a ways away from my next full book.
A
for
giant
sure.
bomb expose.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs. A gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Telling us the true story.
No.
Jeff Gerspin.
Nope. Jeff's great.
And we're trying to pick out some scoops from you.
I really like Giant Bomb. Yeah. Giant Bomb's great.
Okay, cool. Well, Dan, thank you so much for being here. People can find you on Giant Bomb, obviously, on the Giant Bomb East cast.
The Giant Beast cast.
The Giant Beast cast. Yep. And where else? On Twitter?
Twitter, most everything is just at Dan Reichert, no space, R-Y-C-K-E-R-T. Twitter. Yeah, I don't really do Facebook or anything. So yeah, just do Twitter.
Just do Twitter.
That's the main one I use.
and a Taco Bell near you. Or
yes.
A Taco Bell in Las Vegas.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to seeing the inevitable videos from your Taco Bell wedding.
Yeah. They're including a videographer and a photographer, so it will be documented for sure.
I'm sure they are.
I cannot wait. Dan, thank you so much for being here. Goodbye.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, that was a lot of fun. I think we got to wrap things up. Kirk, before we go...
Okay.
Sir, what TV shows are you watching that I should watch and I'm not right now? Talk
I don't know
into
about
TV
whether
show.
You should watch them. So I just watched the first season of this show called Sense8. Have you heard of this show?
I have. I heard of it, yeah.
It's a Netflix show from the Wachowskis and a writer of Babylon 5.
Okay.
And I had watched two episodes of it a long time ago and was like not grabbed by it. I was like, okay, whatever. This seems kind of weird. But then I think the second season came out and people said it was pretty good. And I was bored over the weekend and decided to watch it. And so everybody likes like a different kind of cheesy stuff. But this is like the exact kind of cheesy stuff that I love is this show. I really liked it a lot. I don't know if any listeners like this show. I see you. I'm right there with you on liking it. It's about, do you know what it's about at all?
No.
So it's about... I guess it's not really like a spoiler. It's about people who like develop the ability to psychically connect to one another all around the world. And there's like a group of 8 of them. And that's the 8. And they're called Sense8s. And there's like an 8 in the title, which is terrible. But and then they can like trade sort of consciousnesses to one another. So eventually they become this like Swiss Army Knife Voltron. Because, like, the one chick is, like, an awesome fighter, and the one guy knows how to drive, and the one guy's really good with guns, and another's a cop, and one's a hacker. And so they're all, like, helping each other out. And it almost becomes, like, The Matrix, because there are scenes that are very Matrixy, where, like, it's like you're trapped in the complex, but then someone's in your ear being like, okay, you have to go left and, like, get out of here. And, you know, there's a whole global conspiracy going on. And it's just very fun. It's, like, super sexy and pretty gay in, like, a very, like, pansexual way. And there's everyone on it is extremely attractive. And it kind of has this, like, a really, like, just sort of global, like, everyone's a really good person sort of fantasy aspect to it that I just found really, like, just appealing and fun to just sit and sort of watch throughout the weekend. It's also, like, super violent, which I sort of enjoyed. Like, it has, like, really awesome fight scenes and tons of violence. So it's like sex, violence, kind of a positive, uplifting message. So I'm into it. There's a whole second season that I'm going to watch, and I'm excited.
Interesting.
I'm excited to watch it.
I'm not a Matrix fan.
Oh, really?
Although I did. Yeah. Wow. I did really like V for Vendetta.
Really?
But I am not.
That's so interesting.
I think the second and third Matrix movies just ruined the whole series.
I just generally don't believe that like subsequent art can ruin initial art. Like I don't like the sequels either, but
I do. You, what are you talking about? The finale of Lost ruined that whole show.
I don't agree. Like I don't think it did. Like
the ending of Prey ruined the entire
game. Completely disagree about that.
I guess
that.
That's different.
No, but I also totally disagree. And but no, I mean I think The Matrix 2 like had some cool shit and some bad shit. The Matrix 3 was just a pretty bad movie. The first Matrix is like one of the greatest action movies of all time, and like no amount of bullshit and like bad video game tie-ins and sequels and whatever can ruin that. Like it can change the
What about the red pill stuff?
Oh, who gives a shit? Like, I don't know. People misuse or reappropriate cool video game and like sci-fi jargon all the time. That doesn't affect my appreciation. Dude, The Matrix is an incredible movie, I think. I really, really like that movie.
Well, I mean, you're not alone in thinking that. I just am.
No, but fair enough. That's interesting, though. V for Vendetta, I actually watched the first. I've never finished it. I watched, like, part of it and was sort of just not feeling it. What's good about that movie?
Really? Oh, man. I don't know. I just love it. Something about the way it's told is really interesting, and there are some interesting twists towards the end. And I think Natalie Portman was, like, my childhood crush, so I've always enjoyed watching
her. Yeah, I've always thought about it. It turns up from time to time, like, on Netflix or HBO or something, and I've always been like, I should watch this just because I really like the Wachowskis in general. I sort of like
you
all
should.
Of their movies.
Man, you
I like
should.
Jupiter
you should
Ascending.
Totally watch
I like
it.
That movie. So I like every Wachowski movie I've seen. And I haven't seen Speed Racer. And I gather Speed Racer is actually like one of those movies people say is underrated.
Cult classic type of movie. Well, so something that is interesting, I realized this the other day because Amanda and I were trying to figure out something to watch, is that I just have so little interest in watching movies these days because I would so much rather be watching shows because there's so much, it's so much more interesting and enjoyable and satisfying to get into one long story that unfolds over a bunch of episodes than it does to just watch 1 2-hour story.
Sometimes I find that's true. It depends on the show, though. Like, I like when there's going to be an ending. Like, one nice thing about Sense8 is they kind of made it to be like a movie the way that, like, what's the show with the little kids and the monster and the Upside Down? What's that one called? See, this is me. I'm old.
Stranger Things.
I'm 54
you really
years old.
Are. Just, you really do have Alzheimer's, man.
I'm losing it. So Stranger Things was kind of felt like a movie, right? Like it had an ending. Like it didn't end, it didn't resolve everything, but it kind of had an ending.
But it was way better than a movie because you got to unfold and like take its time over 8 episodes.
But there are shows like, I like a show like The Americans. Sometimes I watch that and I'm just, I just feel like I'm kind of in this endless thing that like just doesn't like that show has arcs and endings, but there are times where I like just watching a thing that has a beginning and an end still.
Sure. Have you watched Bloodline?
No. Is it good?
Yeah, man. So that comes back this week for its final season, third and final season. So that stars Kyle Chandler and Ben Mendelsohn, and they are both incredible.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I love Kyle Chandler. He's great.
Actors too. Man, so the first season of that show is excellent, fantastic. The second season is just really bad.
It's just like Friday Night Lights. It's like his last show. Same deal.
Yeah, so I'm very curious, but now it's going to end on the third season. This is a Netflix show, by the way. So it's basically, it's set in Florida, and it's about this family that owns this inn. And in the first season, without spoiling anything, the tagline is like, we're not bad people, but we did a bad thing. And the whole first season is about the bad thing that they did.
Got it.
And it's really good. It unfolds really interesting ways, and it's very cool. It's a very cool show and really well acted. And it's very like, it's set in the Keys of Florida, and you feel the Keys really viscerally. Like you just get this sense that you're there, and it's really interesting in that way. Like there's just sweat and palm trees.
It's cool, man. The Keys are an interesting place because you remember I went to school in Miami, and we went down to the Keys a couple of times,
close.
And they're not. They're not what I thought they would be at all. Like, they're way more just sort of casual and all over the place. I was expecting, it's going to be like posh vacation destinations, but not even Key West isn't really that way. It's way more just people just live there. And some people have keys.
Well,
There'll
so,
be like
yeah,
a key
you'll
that's
find this
named
really interesting.
For like someone's husband, and it's just basically a little
key
rock.
Largo.
Like, it's almost not even an island. So that sounds cool. That makes me want to watch it.
Yeah, you should watch the first season. It's only 10 episodes. And then the other show that's coming back is House of Cards. You know that comes back next week?
Yeah, I'm way behind, though. I stopped watching, like, Jeez. I think I stopped watching when he got elected president. So I think that was the second season.
Oh, really?
There might have been two seasons since I last watched House of Cards.
He became president in...
At the end of season two,
I think. At the end of season two, yeah. And then three and four. And then three was kind of bad. And then, if I remember correctly, four got
that's
better.
That's what I remember you telling me was, yeah, that four got good.
Yeah. Three had some issues. And it was just, yeah, three was bad. And then four... there's a thing that happens that kind of kicks it into gear, and then it gets really interesting. Nice. And they also brought in this young, handsome Republican dude who's running against Frank.
A new adversary.
The election
is always what he kind of needs.
And he's good. He's really good and brings an interesting angle to it. So I'm looking forward to that next season. Even though it's kind of like, what can they do that will like top
our
current political situation?
It's funny because that show and then Veep, which has also been really funny this season. Veep has a similar challenge where Veep, it really is like, you know, that show is just about, do you watch that show at all? Veep?
They just moved away.
Right. And it's smart because right now this season is about her not being president, which sort of winds up working because otherwise it really does feel like you're watching just the same thing that already happened in real life.
I
just heard someone describe that as putting a hat on a hat. like making a joke about a thing that's already a joke.
I was listening to the South Park creators, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, talk about this on a recent podcast. I think it was a Bill Simmons podcast. Mm-hmm. They were talking about this, and they were talking about how it's impossible for them to go after Trump because he's already a parody.
Right.
And there's no way to make fun of him because anything he does and says is just already like funnier than anything they could possibly do, which is depressing. And they were talking about how like their most recent season, which I actually haven't watched, but it was all about the election and the campaign. And then after Trump was elected, it just got dark and like went off the rails and they just didn't know what to do, which is really wild.
It kind of makes sense. I can understand that, like running into that.
Yeah, they were talking about how they wrote this excellent episode based on Hillary winning and like they had to rewrite all this killer stuff. Yeah, and they just had to write a new one. Yeah, it's crazy.
Think of the comedians. The comedians are definitely they're suffering the most under the Trump administration, I think.
That's what I've always said. Yeah, it's just they're the real victims.
Definitely.
like that guy who tweeted the joke the other day.
He was just trying to make a joke. Think of the comedians.
He's just trying to make a joke, yeah. All right, on that note, I think it's time for us to go.
So.
We will be back next week. It's almost time for E3. So we will almost be back with our special E3 programming that we have planned. I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, goodbye, Kirk.
All right, see you next week.
Kotaku Split Screen is the official podcast of video game website Kotaku.com. It is produced by Kirk Hamilton and me, Jason Schreier. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast, and he also wrote and performed our theme song and all the other music on the show. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR Now, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. And if you like us, we hope you'll leave us lots of nice reviews on all of those lovely sites and services. You can find all of our episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen, and you can reach us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.